This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I think Oregon has a little advantage on the line of scrimmage here. Isn't that interesting? And you got home field, obviously, at your back. And what's the Wilner headline out there? Big Ten teams having to travel two or more time zones are just horrific so far this year. What I'm trying to tell you is I think Oregon's going to win the game outright.
Oh, he had to do it. He had to do it. I'm trying to go under the radar, underdog. Nobody's giving us a chance. I'm watching all these national shows.
Jinx, is that what you're going with?
No, there's no jinx because this man is Nostradamus. Joining us now is the voice of college football, the commissioner himself. Every Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, live on YouTube, 5 o'clock our time. You can check the podcast. Go subscribe to the podcast and the YouTube page at Josh Pate, CFB. It's Josh Pate's college football show. Josh Pate, first off, we will get to your pick of my team last night on the show. I did have to ask, though, like, what was in the water last week? Because we had people texting us and tweeting us all weekend of like, damn, that Josh Pate guy nailed it this week because it was absolute carnage. So what led you to believe that, and what are tonight's lottery numbers?
Deep inhale, exhale here. I'll tell you what was in the water. Vanderbilt's goalpost in the Cumberland River. That's what was in the water. I want you guys to follow me here. A little brief story. I know our time is limited. So I live downtown Nashville, about a mile or a mile and a half from Vanderbilt Stadium, well within walking distance, shall we say. I get on a plane. I fly 700 miles to go watch A&M just body bag Missouri, and I'm sitting on the tarmac in Houston about to take off and fly back watching Vanderbilt close out Alabama, which in and of itself is a sentence that it's tough to push out of your mouth, but it happened. We land in Nashville. Nice flight, non-eventful. I get in my car. I live like 10 minutes from the airport. As we're coming back into downtown across the bridge, there is a crew, like a crane crew or something like that, that is pulling the goalpost out of the river. And it was just college football's ultimate slap in the face of you travel halfway around the world to try and find the biggest event of Saturday, and every now and then it could be right down the road in your backyard. I have never been more exhilarated and humiliated at the same time in all of my years.
Now, Josh, if you would have just decided, I'm going to take it easy this week, you would kind of called Upset Cities happening. You certainly, I mean, maybe I'm misremembering. I don't know if you had Vanderbilt beating Alabama straight up, but like calling all the upsets, maybe you just say to yourself, you know what? It might get weird here. I'm going to stay home. I'll take it easy on the mileage reports with CBS and 24/7. I am going to stay here and make it easy on myself. Had you done that, would you have participated? You don't want to be a biased guy, and I don't think you are, but when a field goal is being carried down Broadway to a river, how do you not have the feelings of, I got massive guns, I can help these people, this seems fun once in a lifetime? Would you have wanted to participate?
I think I would have. I mean, judging by my actions in the past, like I was at the 2017 title game when Tua hit the second and 26 pass to Devontae Smith, and it happened in front of me. Now, I grew up in Georgia, actually, so if anything, I had reason to be biased for Georgia. I just jumped into the dog pile because that's what my instinct told me to do. If you go back and watch the ESPN feed,
I'm just look it up
in
right
there.
Now.
Yeah, I'm just in there with the players. It's the most unprofessional. I don't know. I've done some pretty unprofessional things. But, yeah, you would have absolutely. There would have been local news helicopter footage of me carrying that thing down the Broadway to the goal, to the Cumberland. Now, here's the good part of that. If there's any team in America you want to be accused of having bias for, is Vandy not the biggest safe space homer alert that there is in college football? No one's going to get mad at you for that.
No, that is a great point, and that would have been hilarious to see the biceps carrying the field goal into the
just
river.
To be like, is that Josh?
I think that's a circle. That's a Zapruder film. I think that's Josh Pate down there carrying that damn thing. Man.
He was in the box with Taylor Swift. On
yeah, he
football,
was. This guy's everywhere, dude. Yeah. We can't even keep tabs on him anymore. I'm still waiting for those lottery numbers tonight. Let's stop burying the lead. you're going to be at Autzen Stadium this weekend, and we're all, I mean, this is one of the biggest games in the history of Autzen, no, you know, number two, number three, whatever the rankings are, first or second top five matchup ever in the history of the stadium. You picked Oregon to win last night. What's behind that, the logic and the thinking of Dan Lanning getting a marquee win under his belt?
Yeah, let's set the record straight here. This is the number one team in the JP poll coming into Autzen Stadium. Mm-hmm. So you're placing the number one team in the country as far as I'm concerned. And also, I don't want to do the whole underdog, us against the world thing. I went and picked Oregon last night, and the first thing I did this morning was I clipped it and I texted it to Dan Lanning. Seriously. Because I don't want anybody to be able to sit at a press conference saying no one believed in us. Brian Kelly pulled that on me a couple of weeks ago. They go as a touchdown favorite, by the way. They go edge South Carolina, and he has the audacity to sit in his postgame presser and say, no one picked us to win this game. Like, what are we talking about?
Didn't Georgia try that after one of their titles? Didn't Georgia go like, everybody thought we'd win eight games or something?
Yeah,
everybody. Yeah, no one thought we would, you know, except odds makers and everyone and their mother. So here's my thinking on this. They've both already played Michigan State. I got some pretty good feedback from our Michigan State folks, actually. And they said both really good teams. And it's the line of scrimmage that we thought Oregon got after us more than Ohio State on. Now, whatever that means is whatever it means. I am a believer that, relatively speaking, the offensive line is still the vulnerability of this Ohio State team. It's good. I don't mean it's a trash like Akron coming into Autzen Stadium offensive line, but it's, relatively speaking, their weakness. The thing about Oregon is they've got better depth and athleticism, but they're also more multiple up front, therefore giving you different looks and different pressures and simulated pressures than anyone has to this point, and you're dealing with that level of crowd noise for the first time all year. So things about Ohio State have been perfect. Red zone, perfect. There's just a lot of that could be a little discombobulated in this environment. And I've also watched Ohio State for a few years now go on the road. You know, I think about the Notre Dame game last year. I think about a couple of other big examples, the Michigan games. And it's not that they can't win. They do win. In fact, they've won most of those games, but it's very close. And I trust Oregon in a close game here, especially having experienced Washington twice last year. I think that was a real attention grabber for that program and for that staff and for that team. And everyone's had this one circled for a while. But this is the game where I think Dylan Gabriel's got to shine. That's going to be a very low margin for error game. I think their offensive line is as healthy as it will have been. I really thought they started to ramp up offensive production against Michigan State. One extra day rest, home field. Big Ten teams have been horrific traveling two-plus time zones so far this year. And therefore, I think Oregon's going to narrowly find a way to win this game.
What did Lanning respond with when you texted him?
I don't know that I can state that on the air, but he liked it. Yeah, he approved of it. Let me put it that way.
Now, and you may not share the message, but like when you say he liked, we're getting an actual response, not a thumbs up and that's it, carry on with your day response from Dan Lanning, right?
Oh, a lot of exclamation marks on the end of the sentiment. It's the sentiment itself that I don't think is fit for public airwaves.
Okay. I appreciate that. Now, I think the tough thing for me, because you know, you're in the off season, we're going into a year, everybody in this job, we make these dumb predictions that we have to change or pretend we didn't make. I liked Ohio State going into the year just with the experience they had coming back this year. Now, with sample size in front of us, the difficulty I have here, I love Oregon getting 4 to 3.5. The difficult with picking the game, and I think you highlighted this on the show last night, is I don't know how to interpret Oregon's schedule and the way they played, and I also don't know how to do this with Ohio State, because Ohio State's final scores, I think, do not indicate the Ohio State I've watched. I've watched Ohio State Akron. I've watched Ohio State Michigan State. I'm seeing a team kind of sleepwalk their way through first halves, and then just be Ohio State in the second half and win by 20. So how hard is this for you as true football bro to say time zone stuff mattering, and then also how do I interpret what these identities are when they've played largely cupcakes going into this game?
Yeah, here the one thing I think that cancels that out is you also know in those games, you go into it if you're an Ohio State offense, if you're Chip Kelly, and you know there are certain things you do not have to show, you don't have to do. It's just, you know, going into this, honestly, maybe from both sides, but especially from the Ohio State side, you know, they've had zero incentive to show a lot of things. Like, I don't think they've run the quarterback nearly as much as they're going to in bigger games, designed at least. I don't think they've incorporated the tight end position. I don't think they've incorporated tailbacks in the passing game nearly as much as Chip Kelly will at some point this year. It would figure to start this week. So, yes, the slow start, I've noticed it along with you guys, but it also is indicative of a team that knows it can afford to.
Yeah.
When you've trained your mind to know October 12th, we're going to Austin, and every sentence has ended with, but we got to be better than that against Oregon, but we got to do something different against Oregon. Well, it's not automatic that you get out to a 10-0 lead. It does, percentage-wise, put you in a better position to start fast, but you can say all that. Like, that's how it's supposed to sound. You still got to go do it. You still got to go execute it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Josh Pate is our guest. Josh Pate, CFB on Twitter. Go give him a follow. Josh Pate's College Football Show every Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, 5 o'clock our time on YouTube. Go subscribe to the channel and subscribe to the podcast as well. He's the best out there. Nailed last week, and he's going to be at Autzen this weekend, so follow the socials as well, where you'll get great behind-the-scenes content. Last one I have for you on this, Josh, is I have been told by the internet that Ryan Day and Dan Lanning can't win a big game, so have you contemplated this being a tie?
That's so wrong. I think it's one of the big talking points of the game because it's so fun for me when I get the combination of coaches who, quote-unquote, can't do something because one of them has to do it. So then, yeah, by utter default of moment, someone gets off the proverbial schneid. I keep using these qualifiers because I think all of this is garbage. And then I'm going to be told if there's a rematch in the Big Ten title game and the one who loses Saturday wins that one, both of them revert back to not being able to do whatever it is they both ended up doing.
Who is the biggest fraud in the top 10 to you right now?
Well, it was Missouri, and we got them out of there. Mm-hmm. I mean, Michigan, I didn't even have them in my top 25 last week, and the AP still had them at 10. I don't know if you guys have realized, but that's no more. Miami's an interesting case study right now. Now, full disclosure, so I can be a hypocrite on live radio, I've got Miami in my top 10 power rating-wise. Mm-hmm. I'm very suspicious of them. My own numbers have them a point and a half above Clemson. I'm not so sure I wouldn't take Clemson if they play today. So I have the constitutional right to disagree with my model, and I may exercise it on Miami right now. Now, here's the follow-up to that. They have the ability to be one of the best teams in the country. They are not playing to that level right now. Another good case study there is Texas A&M up until last week. I had not bailed on A&M. I still had them in the top 15, 17, or whatever range, and it's because I knew they were what I call a click team. A click team is a team that is not playing up to its capability yet but has the upward mobility potential. Then all of a sudden they get their starting quarterback back, and he shines, and they dominate Missouri. And so folks have started to buy into them again. Their ceiling at A&M is top 10 potential. Conversely, the ceiling of maybe an Iowa State or a Kansas State, both of whom have been winning, Iowa State's undefeated, their ceiling from a power rating standpoint is probably 13, 14, 15, somewhere like that. Mm. So you're just looking at what teams are capable of. So Miami's capable of doing a lot. They are not playing to that level right now. They can. But that doesn't change the answer to the question you gave me. You said right in this moment. I think Miami may be the answer if you're looking right in this moment.
It's a little off the radar, but I know you follow it. You're a diehard college football fan. You may not talk about it as much as you talk about other teams, but are we going to have a guy from Boise in New York who only plays the first half of games because he might be in my conversation mentally of one of the top five best college football players I've ever watched? What Ashton Jeanty is doing at Boise, where seemingly every play, four guys just bounce off of him and he runs for 60. Your thoughts on what his season has been so far and his chances of actually getting to New York as a Heisman finalist?
I'd be surprised if he's not there. I think to this point in the season, you're nearly halfway through the year, I think a lot of people have baked in the idea that he's one of, you know, four, one of five, however many get there. I think he'll be there. I also think that there are a lot of things that are going to happen for the eventual finalists that haven't happened yet, which is pretty common sense. But I'm thinking about Quinn Ewers having his three or four biggest remaining stages be in front of him. So there's a lot of that to sort out. I think, look, Shedeur, I don't know, is in the conversation as much as Travis Hunter. Shedeur Sanders is doing some crazy things right now. You know that he still gets harassed every play. They're still in the 100s in pressure rate allowed. They can't run the ball. Their leading rusher is 80 yards shy of Kansas State's third leading rusher. So they're doing nothing to help him. And he's thrown a total of 3 picks on the year, and he's top 15 in all the discernible quarterback metrics. Like, he's almost paying a price for being Deion's son, if you can believe that. Because folks aren't actually talking about his performance. So that's a really, really roundabout way of saying, yes, Ashton Jeanty will be in New York if I have my way.
Yeah, we had last one I got for you, Josh, is we had an all-time moment on Monday on the Feinbaum Show.
I'm in sports hell.
And I'm just curious to ask you, so I've seen Joe Klatt say that they are a glorified Big 12 team from 2017. I've seen articles written that their coach needs to tuck his shirt in. How are things going? You're down there. How are things going in Tuscaloosa right now?
Not too good. Not too good. I have been a little taken aback. I got to be honest with you. I've been a little taken aback because the same people I listened to essentially place a crown on Kalen DeBoer's head 6 days prior, then ripped it off and threw it in the Cumberland River along with the goalpost 6 days later. And I just have a radical opinion for you guys. Okay, we can edit this out of the replay if we want to. And I may whisper it. Here we go. I kind of think Kalen DeBoer's just the same guy he's always been. And the guy he's been is pretty good. He's pretty good. I think there is a lot of newness. There is a lot of learning a new program. There's a lot of transition. You're going from Nick Saban to fill in the blank. Whoever that was going to be was going to have a little transition period. It's just that they don't allow for that at Alabama. So I still have the opinion that they could clean things up and end up winning a national title. They could end up winning the SEC. They're one of the only teams in the country that I think could lose to Vandy and still be in that conversation. But they are in that conversation. I just think also, I know this is dirty to say, they didn't lose to a terrible team. It's just no one down here wants to admit it because it sounds a lot better to pretend Vandy is the same Vandy they've always been. This Vandy team was probably a double-digit favorite over any other Vandy team you've seen in your lifetime. But it's okay, because that doesn't get as much treadway or headway on the the clickosphere.
Yeah.
So let's just pretend like it's time to burn it down. Let's run DeBoer out of town. Because, by the way, that's the attitude with which that program operated before Nick Saban. That's why it was flying so high before he got there.
A lot of us out here out west, we're a little more laid back, Josh, so we're not as quite passionate as people in the South. You grew up in Georgia. You like to quote Meemaw quite a bit on the show. Did Meemaw have things like this when your team lost?
We'll send a U-Haul to your ass.
Is that how Meemaw used to talk back in the day, just not being familiar with how reactionary people are down there, how normal that is for people like you who grew up around it?
Meemaw believed in letting your assistant go to the gas station for you, letting your assistant do your grocery shopping, because Meemaw knew that you do make the money you make because of the crowd that is at Piggly Wiggly on Tuesday afternoon, which is a grocery store chain down here. However, they will also chew you up and spit you out and not care a second about it because they believe they are the program, not you. And to an extent, they're right. But to an extent, like, I've got folks down here right now yelling at DeBoer that they need to stop running the 4-2-5. And then if you ask them, okay, but are you okay with them running nickel? Oh, I'm fine with nickel. I just don't want them to run 4-2-5. Well, sir, that's the same thing.
Oh, it's fantastic. Well, we went long with you because we're excited you're going to be in Eugene this weekend. So I'll let you get out of here on this one. Where can people find the socials? Because there's going to be great content behind the scenes. And then now you've been to Autzen once. You came out a couple years ago for the UCLA game. Are you prepared for how much different this atmosphere will look than that 2022 UCLA game?
Okay, no, I'm not prepared. I know that. I know I'm not prepared. I heard foliage is in peak season right now. We got low to mid-70s, high clear skies, maybe a cloud or two, beautiful sunset, twilight kickoff. It's going to be wonderful. So, no, I'm not prepared. But I do encourage everyone, find me on Instagram, at LateKickJosh, because all I do on Saturdays is I just hang out on the sideline, hang out at the facility on Friday, give you as much behind-the-scenes content as I can, and it's free. Like, selfishly, I think it's the best stuff we do. So that will be fun, even if you don't care a thing about any other word that comes out of my mouth.
Well, if Oregon wins on a walk-off touchdown, you might see Josh Pate live on Instagram in the dog pile. So that's why you need to go
follow. I don't think he'll be on the dog pile. I think he'll be hugging Lanning.
I told you. Josh Pate, CFB. Go give him a follow on Twitter. He's the best in the business. His college football show is on every Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, 5 o'clock on YouTube. He will be live in Eugene this weekend. Can't wait to see you this weekend, man. Thanks as always. Enjoy the game, and we'll chat again next Wednesday.
I appreciate it, guys.